All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, April 8th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. We did make it. It is 29 degrees with a real feel of 11. If you can even believe it. And snowing here in upstate New York. It's snowing again. Two Fridays in a row. I don't know what's going on, but it is April 8th, if you noticed. And this, I don't know, this weekend, hopefully it'll all melt. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Butt Out, Mr. Senator, Unchecked Disruptive Technology, and Robots Take All. Remember, we again did another show on self-driving vehicles and a lot of the stuff that's moving very fast in that field. One of the things I want to add to that we ran into after the show, so I saw an entire fleet of autonomous tractor trailers. And I hadn't seen this before the show, but I was talking about the autonomous tractor trailers. They had them, I believe it was Daimler Chrysler. And they had done some testing in Germany as well as in Nevada. Well, they had like six manufacturers now of autonomous tractor trailers that did over 1,000 miles driving them as a, like when we were first talking about the self-driving technology, they had referred to it as a swarm, but now they're calling it, I don't know, I'd have to find the story and I don't even know if I posted it, where they piggyback using the wireless connections that we were talking about for them to communicate. The same type of scenario that Toyota had discussed in their new division that was going to be dedicated to vehicles communicating with each other and them then pulling that information and using it for actionable data. Oh, truck platooning, that's what they call it. Similar to concepts with self-driving car involves two or three trucks that autonomously drive in a convoy and are connected via wireless with the leading truck determining the speed and route. So they are expecting Europe to be covered with these autonomous self-driving vehicles here in the not too distant future. Put on a seatbelt, guys. Also, not one, but two of my friends told me yesterday that they both saw something about Toyota on TV. Lady Pitbull said yesterday that in Michigan, Toyota announced that they're opening some sort of facility with connections to the University of Michigan for self-driving cars. And my friends here in Rochester told me that he just saw a thing on TV that Toyota has something that they're launching here in Rochester with one of the universities as well. And we found out they just blew $1 billion on that artificial intelligence center. They put Gil Pratt, former director of DARPA's robotic challenge, in charge. And think about this too. I was just kind of postulating this. So we also found out that Google is putting Boston Dynamics up for sale. Boston Dynamics, the parent company of Atlas, who competed in the DARPA Robotics Challenge, seeing the connections here. And Boston Dynamics is up for sale. They had postulated that maybe Amazon, but maybe Toyota are going to be purchasing that company. And we found out, now Boston Dynamics, of course, is in Boston. We found out that Toyota just opened a satellite office for their autonomous vehicles. Where? Oh, just outside of Boston. So I am going to guess that there is going to be a deal. We see the dotted line. There's going to be a deal between Google and Toyota to sell them Boston Dynamics. Boston Dynamics, having worked as a partner with DARPA, moved the robotics division into Google. They're now going to slice that off and sell it to Toyota with the former director from DARPA in charge of the DARPA Robotics Challenge in charge. That makes a lot of sense. So what are we going to end up with? We are going to end up with an army of atlases that are running some very intelligent deep learning artificial intelligence and autonomy that can work in swarms like cars. Think about it. It's Toyota. So that vision of armies of Atlas robots marching down the street one day can come to fruition, people. I just had this, like, last night. All of it started hitting me. I'm like, wait a second. And now they're going to train people. And just two cities, Rochester and Michigan. Now they're putting out calls for people to come go to Toyota school. Start learning about how to repair. I don't know. I was almost thinking that. I mean, honestly, you want a job with some job security in the future? I'd say go to Toyota school. Might even be kind of fun, but the future that it's promising isn't any fun. I don't want to see an army of Atlas robots. All right, I was not going to get on this today. But there was one more thing about Toyota. I saw a story late last night out of MIT Technology Review. And it's a little bit more about some of the stuff that Toyota is doing. They're calling it the Guardian Angel Program. Now, if you want to call Atlas Guardian Angel, be my guest. But he's not a guardian angel in my dreams. Thank you very much. Toyota joins a race for self-driving cars with an invisible co-pilot. Now, we found out that BMW is working with Baidu, China's equivalent to Google. And they are not planning on removing the steering wheel, the brake, and the gas pedal. They want to give you some autonomy still. We also found out that Baidu now is testing self-driving cars in the United States. They are also involved in Silicon Valley in, and I don't remember the name of the institute, but there were a group of them that all belonged to this, you know, tech Institute for supercomputing and whatever the hell they were doing, but Baidu was a part of that. They're including Chinese supercomputing Google equivalent in the visions of the future here in the United States. The other thing I was thinking about, why are we including this Chinese Google in our plans? And like I mentioned, you know, keep your enemies close. But then I started connecting dots. You know, we were reading, we ended the show yesterday, and this is where I want to get back to. Looking at China now talking about launching its own digital currency, you know, as all jobs go away and robots take them all, and there is no more money and we go all digital. Yeah, that whole thing. And I think they're making a power play here, guys. And I think that this whole rivalry with China, though it's real, they also see that China's got clone factories, China's got technology. China's in the same boat we are. I mean, they just got rid of 2 or 3 million jobs of miners because of, you know, climate change. We can't go mining anymore. What are they going to start doing with all those people? Well, they're going to start doing with all those people just like what we're going to start doing with all those people. It's going to be Lab Rat City. We are going to be turned into the product that is now experimented on. And not that we haven't been before. We've always been. But I think we're going to see something way scarier than what we've ever seen before. And, you know, I'm going to skip the self-driving car story because I've done too many. All right, maybe what we're going to do is, I need to get something that's pushing my buttons this morning. This isn't pushing my buttons. All right, well, here's a good one. I've had this lined up for the last week or so, and it's out of LinkedIn, but this might fire me up. It's got a lot of synthetic biology stuff I want to talk about today. A question comes out. Somebody posted this from Granite State College. Somebody in management. Will artificial intelligence improve democracy or destroy it? Well, good question. There's a big difference between what a person wants and what they need, and we've talked about that before. I have that discussion with my daughter quite often. And on one hand, we need healthy food, a good night's rest, and decent medical care. But a little voice inside our heads has us craving dinner at Gordon Ramsay's, an overnight stay at the Ritz-Carlton, and a spa weekend at St. Regis and Aspen to fix whatever is wrong. Yeah, or whatever. I'm sure there's all kinds of voices we could think of that would be bad for us that we would want versus need. The same is true with countries. There's a big difference between what a country wants and what it needs. And while we may need better roads, well, we do if we want to run self-driving cars, we found out. And if we want better schools, and we want better playgrounds, we want others to pay for them. And, you know, let's take this a step further. If we want anything, we think we're going to have this utopian future with robots feeding us grapes and no jobs. Who the hell's going to pay for all that? And we can have robots building everything around the world. But there isn't going to be any economy flowing when people aren't working anymore. And you can't just go endlessly handing money to people without there being an exchange of some sort. And while we need elected officials who can make the best possible decisions, we tend to vote for candidates who are good looking and make us feel better. Well, I don't know, or brainwash us into thinking that they're going to be the ones who make the difference and then are actually worse than the last clown in the office. Our wants and needs are vastly different creatures constantly pulling us in opposite directions. And in fact, many of us are addicted to our wants. Yes, dopamine carrot, guys. That's that push button. That's that manipulation that they do on us right now. The addiction to your wants. A drug addict has an unquenchable thirst for drugs. A Facebook addict is always checking their phone. And a sex addict can never get enough. The irrational mind may live next door to the rational mind, but together they form contradictory arguments inside a rather dysfunctional neighborhood in our own heads. Wow, that was a pretty good blurb there. So how can we possibly make better decisions and create a better world if we all have to work with defective humans? Well, good question. The current state of AI, there tends to be a lot of confusion between machine learning and artificial intelligence. In reality, machine learning is really the only kind of AI that exists. And yeah, this is some sort of management major on LinkedIn writing this story. I mean, we know that there's deep learning that is happening right now. And it's getting way more complex than it has been in the past. We have robots teaching themselves in 8 hours using a visual processing unit how to do a job so they can be plugged into a new place in the factory tomorrow morning. I would say that, you know, again, this is going to be one of those people that tries to downplay the dangers, but it was still a really interesting article as we get a little more into this. Oh, and he does mention deep learning here. Sorry, I'm not going to bash him. Says anyway, at the same time, our understanding of AI is changing. And most things that we thought of as AI in the past were a little more than a sophisticated form of computer programming. But along with advances in technology, the latest strategy for AI developers has become, don't model the world, model the mind. And, you know, this is where all this deep brain research is going into as well. Learning how neurons connect and how pushing one button affects 10 more. You know, they're modeling IBM, actually. There's so many stories, and I just haven't had time to get to any of them, but there was one story about IBM and the dude that had spent, did it say 37 years? This new supercomputing, IBM computer that was built on the structure of the brain that they just gave to, Los Alamos that we read about like Monday or Tuesday. I dug up the name of the guy who actually developed it and looked into him, and it was like a 27 or a 37 year project to create this thing. It was insane. I might have to find that one on Monday. It was a pretty good story. But yeah, they are building computers to work like the human brain. That is the goal, of course. We know about the upload and download future. And mimicking nature is the best way to usurp it. Trojan horse. Alright, since 2012, a specific machine learning technique called deep learning has permeated the AI world. Researchers have abandoned the classical programming trick style of AI and switched to deep learning because it works far better than any previous methodologies. We made more progress in the years since 2012 than in the past preceding 25 years. So in the last 4 years, and this is again the growth of exponential technology, exponential returns, we have made bigger leaps and bounds in the last 4 years than we have in the last 25. And that would absolutely make sense. And several key AI problems, sorry, I had to sneeze, including image understanding, that's the VPU, visual processing unit, and they're using the NVIDIA cards. I actually have a story about the guy who is in charge of that whole revolution. Meet the man selling the shovels in the machine learning gold rush. That's the CEO of NVIDIA. It is the dude. I guess they're using these visual processing units to power a lot of these supercomputers that are doing visuals and things. Very frightening. Just it's this stuff is happening so fast that even me, the tech junkie for 25 or 30 years, it's all I could do, and it comes out of my mouth faster than it goes in sometimes. I can't even keep up on this anymore. That's unusual for me. It's been very difficult. There's way more news than we can cover. Keep in mind that deep learning isn't still true deep AI, so don't worry about it, but it's kind of sophisticated and adaptable intelligence. Intelligence humans exhibit, but it's a giant leap forward on the path to getting there. So should we use AI to create better citizens? And this is the part I wanted to get to. Well, how can flawed humans possibly create unflawed AI? And that's a good question. Is making the so-called perfect AI really optimal? Well, that's another good question. Will AI become the great compensator for human deficiencies? We better hope not, because then we'll be replaced. And, oh, yes, does AI eventually replace our need for other people? I'm going to think probably yes. We see it already happening. One possible step towards integrating artificial intelligence with democracy will be to gamify. Now, this is where I started to see flashes of idiocracy and the dangling carrot and say, oh, it all makes so much sense now. Talk about the dumbing down of society. Yes, one possible step towards integrating artificial intelligence, red button, with democracy will be to gamify the interface between people and governments with something similar to a customer loyalty program. In this case, by gamifying citizenship through a government loyalty program. What? Yes. Now, let's read what that means, because I could see this working very easily. But on the other hand, it is beyond horrifying. A system like this would effectively promote involvement in the government by rewarding people for their role in creating a better functioning society. It would begin by asking questions like, Have you gotten all your shots? Finished high school? Learned about American history or served in the military or some similar community service position? Next question. How many times have you voted since you were 18? Next question. How many government services have you taken advantage of over the past decade? Next question. If they sent you a survey asking you to evaluate their performance, did you answer that survey? Next question. Have you been asked to serve on a jury, and have you? Now, after you fill out this questionnaire, they could be giving rewards to top citizens who did their duty, who got their shots, who finished high school, who learned about American history and served in the military, voted 100 times since they were 18, took advantage of government food stamps, and then filled in my survey to say that the woman at the DMV was friendly to me. I went and sat on a jury for a month and a half. Yes, I did all those things. So now I get my bonus club good citizen rewards, like low interest loans, lower taxes, free national park passes, less TSA scrutiny at the airports because, you know what, I'm a good little citizen, higher credit ratings, and maybe even favorable treatment in the event of a tax audit. Now, what do you think about them apples? I was like, holy crap, reality TV and game show mentality, video game Johnny has completely devolved us into some sort of beyond dystopian nightmare. Like, this is almost like a Monty Python meets dystopia, like the movie Brazil, where it's got a little weird sense of twisted humor, but lots of scary in it. And I don't mean humor, ha-ha. I mean humor like, oh, my goodness. How horrifying. And, you know, I could see them doing that. Let's reward people. I mean, we've already tested it out. Let's give them Walmart gift cards for turning in their neighbors. Let's give them Walmart gift cards for bringing in their guns. Well, now, let's give them low-interest loans, food vouchers. They didn't say that, but, hey, that would work out well, too. $100 free groceries, national park passes, and less groping by Maude and her boyfriend Clyde at the airport. Perhaps the highest-ranked citizens could even win a free night stay in the Lincoln bedroom at the White House. Could you imagine? They would be like the grand prize. They would be like the trip to Hawaii in the new car on Price is Right. Guys, how frightening. Like, this better not be what America turns into. The game show of America. Be a good little citizen and you get prizes. And that way, we'll have all kinds of participating people who are now being given, again, a fake illusion. Since it's crumbling, people are beginning to question who they're voting for and how they're voting, and things aren't turning out the way that they voted. How they said they want a candidate, and now it's possible that the party itself could pull that candidate and put someone else in with a switcheroo. That illusion is cracking. They got to find another way to suck you back in, and that would be giving you game show prizes. With the right status, people may receive advance notification and priority rating when applying for certain jobs as well. So look, they're going to make it very lucrative for you to be a good little citizen. And when it comes to jobs, AI will have the ability to determine your optimal career path by analyzing your past experiences, inherent skills, individual preferences, and do it in a far more efficient manner than any system we have today. So good old AI HR. So in this dude's mind, democracy will be able to survive AI if we make us good little citizens and decide who's going to get when, what, and where. 8 reasons why democracy is today's best form of government. Democracy is far from perfect, but when it comes to running a government, it has a number of built-in mechanisms for promoting fairness and participation. Here's some of the reasons why those who advocate democracy view it as today's best form of government. And I don't know. Do we want to read all this? I really don't want to read it. It just says, you know, how we supposedly have a stake in everything and we can participate, but we all know it's bullshit. 8 reasons why, though, democracy still comes up short. Well, there are no perfect systems, and in many ways, democracy still comes up short. Democracy is biased toward what we want, not what we need. That's actually a good point. Those who are elected are the ones who do the best job of appealing to the median IQ of the voting public, and that is true as well. Lowest common denominator. And we like to think that we're electing the best and the brightest, but we're not. Well, good point. Number 3, it's a very adversarial system. Rivalries are good to a certain point, but excessive rivalries create a polarizing environment. Hey, we just saw that happen. I can't even wait to see what's going to happen at that Republican National Convention in Ohio that is an open carry state with all the mayhem. I mean, get a life, people. Is it really that important to be that riled up at a political rally that you'd be, like, punching people in the face? And I'd have to say you're on some sort of drugs or alcohol if you're that riled up and some fucking political election is that fucking important that you would get off your ass, off the couch, and go show up at some events? No. That's why we know that this is all orchestrated, because that doesn't happen. I mean, come on. It's important, yes. It's not important enough for me to go to a rally, even when the one time ever I got bamboozled into voting. And I actually felt very strongly that the person I was going to vote for was going to be a good president, and the only one who ever deserved my vote, who then turned around and did all kinds of dirty shit behind my back after he got elected and showed me that he was just as bad as every single one of them. I've sworn them all off now. But I still didn't get up off the couch. And I'm pretty motivated at things. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not feeling too hot today. Just ramble. Voters are also not experts, so there we go. Democracy favors the less busy senior citizens carrying an inordinate amount of clout because they have more time to be involved, and that is very true in a lot of this stuff. You know, that's the cruel joke. When you're young and you're trying to participate in the rat race, you're trying to work 10, 12 hours a day, make some money, put it away. You don't have time to pay attention to any of this stuff. It's only when you retire in the old days, which you can't anymore, or hey, guess what, when you're unemployed, when they're going to have this whole huge global unemployment problem coming up here in the very near future, they're going to find out that there's a lot of people paying attention, so they better come up with something quick, right? Democracy demands also a constantly evolving system for it to function properly. And in our increasingly complex society, it requires constant monitoring, ding, ding, new kinds of checks and balances, oversights, rules, and limitations to make it function properly. I hope they are not going to make this artificial intelligence the ruling grand poobah president esque thing of the United States. Because they were just saying, like, how for HR making hiring decisions that it would be the best deal. Well, hey, for making global decisions at the top level of a country, wouldn't some sort of computer be better than some puny human brain? 8 ways artificial intelligence can improve democracy. Well, since AIs can understand individual preferences, it can help voters make decisions. Oh. And by extension, increase participation. AI will also have the ability to instantly spot fraud and corruption in the system. You think With all the fraud and corruption that's going on, that AI is going to stand up and go, hey, we just found out Hillary Clinton's gaming the system again. She's taking bribes. I mean, come on, that's not going to happen. With better ways of spotting corruption, AI will also pave the way for electronic voting, creating more convenience and enabling a wider cross-section of society to participate. Yeah, I'm going to trust voting through an AI system. Paperless, no less. AI will also allow voters to drill down and get the facts straight on any decision before they make it. Well, so does the internet. And done correctly, AI will improve the caliber of decisions, but not undermine the role of the individual. AI done correctly will also give voters expanded authority, allowing more issues to come up for community input. It will also have the ability to cancel out negative campaigning, biased reporting, and slanted arguments. Yes, because we will have a truth algorithm that can edit and censor anything that is deemed to not be true or fair. AI has the potential to reduce the cost of campaigning and reducing the reliance on contributors. Oh, right. So, will this work out well for us? Well, let's keep in mind that improving democracy and destroying it may very well be the same thing. And with AI, we have the potential to automate democracy as well as the entire decision-making process for government. Ding, ding, ding. Most likely, this will involve a step-by-step process where each new level of automation is tested, refined, and retested before anything is implemented system-wide. Guys, are they really talking about putting a supercomputer in charge of our country? Is that what this guy is suggesting? Because I think it is. Here are 8 possible steps toward an automated AI form of democracy. AI could easily, this is 8 ways artificial intelligence could destroy democracy, is this section. AI could easily alter the one person, one vote system by adding more value to the votes of those who are better informed, better educated, and more involved. Oh! So yeah, you can vote, but guess what? If you haven't participated in our game show democracy, filling out your loyalty club cards and going to your doctor, your vote when it comes time to vote is only going to be worth a quarter vote because you didn't participate. Only the best citizens get the full vote. Number 2. AI could be set up to instantly trigger new elections when public confidence drops below a certain level. Did you guys see? They already, over the Panama Papers, it was just in the first, like, day, there were so many people in the streets that the prime minister or the ruler, I don't know if he's a prime minister or president or what he is over there in Iceland, but he stepped down, and I saw yesterday they already elected somebody new. That was a fast turnaround there. Number 3, minor decisions could be automated, and if that works, it would begin to automate more significant ones. Number 4, when it comes to justice systems, AI could eventually be used to eliminate judges altogether. Now that's frightening. So let's not even have humans in the courts anymore. Let's have AI judges who have no emotion whatsoever. Lay out the facts, Jack, and we're going to decide whether or not you go into the mental mind lock jail. Right? Remember we read about that, where they could like make your brain feel like it's been in jail for 1,000 years, but it's only been like an hour? Oh, man, these are like Terminator courts. I don't even believe that we're reading this. When it comes to justice systems, AI could eventually be used to eliminate judges altogether and in the process deliver far more impartial court rulings. Yeah, I really want. I mean, I guess there's all kinds of payola in the courts. There's tons of corruption. I've heard so many horror stories. I have a few friends that are going through some stuff right now, and it's just like beyond. You know, you got enough money, you can make anything happen, and it's not a just system at all. But you really want freaking Atlas making the decisions as to whether or not you go to jail? You know, or Cylon with the red light and I don't think so. Number five, when problems occur, AI could be used to automatically trigger new referendums based on situational awareness. Hey, we talked about situational awareness yesterday. Everybody needs to have situational awareness 24/7. Otherwise, you get what you deserve. If you're not paying attention and it hits you smack dab in the head, then that was your own fault. Referendums based on situational awareness, riots, protests, and petitions, as well as the ebbing and waning of levels of public sentiment. Yes, this is automatically trigger new referendums and release the army of Atlas bots to go tamp down on the riots in Detroit. Eventually, AI could be used to eliminate scheduled election days completely and then replace them with an auto-correction system that triggers election days and election issues as needed. So it'll be elections on demand, people, all day, every day. Ever-changing laws. This is insanity. Taking this line of thinking a few steps further, AI could eliminate elected officials altogether. Ding. And replace them with automated votes by the general population. And as a very final step, if every other AI process functions properly, we could eliminate voting altogether in favor of an automated consensus system. Yeah, like Dancing with the Stars. Vote on your cell phone app. Since AI already knows how we think, it could register our votes automatically without even pushing a button. You know, talk about, like, beyond lazy. I actually came upon a story yesterday evening about that just, like, typifies how lazy this world has become. And in reading, like, how we're going to cure our democracy with AI, I really don't think there's any hope for humanity, guys. I hate to tell you that, but if we're talking about farming it all out to some artificial deep learning intelligence, our entire administration of our country and all of our decisions being made by the AI based upon algorithms, not upon what's right or wrong, just upon being able to weigh what they think statistically speaking is the best answer and making all of our rulers AI, letting the votes be made for us because they already know how we're going to vote. We deserve everything we get. This needs to be stopped. This needs to be reeled in. AI's got to die. I hate to say it. You know, one of these days they are going to make it into some sort of sentient being. They're going to send the robots into your homes. It's already coming. They're already working on it. This Toyota purchase of Boston Dynamics is really scaring me because I don't think there have been too many people anywhere that have made that connection or have even talked about Toyota or have even seen Toyota moving into the picture or what some of this means. I haven't seen it anywhere. I saw two stories about the potential of Toyota maybe buying Boston Dynamics from Google, but I didn't see that in any headline. It's a very big deal, people. It's a very big deal. Those are the robot armies coming. But talk about laziness and getting what we deserve. So I see this story yesterday. New Domino's app, talking Domino's Pizza, automatically orders a pizza when you or anyone else opens the application. So you don't even have to push a button anymore. All right, remember we were talking about the self-driving car? You just push a button and say, I need to go to the store. Come pick me up. Well, now you can order a pizza with zero clicks. That's how they're selling it. They're calling it zero clicks. All you got to do is open the app, and it orders you a pizza. The little thing next to it says, I'm sorry, but my butt ordered that pizza. Good old butt dialing. I don't know. You know, we've just become so distilled down to this non-thinking mass of protein and fat. And this world is just spinning down the drain. It's not just our country, it's this world, and we're letting it go, and it's all in the name of profit. You know, some of the things going on in the synthetic biology world, here's another one talking about getting rid of jobs. This new chemistry 3D printer can now synthesize molecules from scratch. Hey, say you're a medical researcher interested in rare chemical compounds in the roots of a little-known Peruvian flower. And it's called ratahine, and it's valuable because it has some fascinating antifungal properties that make it great for medicine. But getting your hands on this rare plant is hard, and no chemical supplier is or has ever sold it. But maybe, thanks to the work of the University of Illinois chemist Martin Burke, you can now print it right in the lab. You guys remember that 3D genomics guy? He wanted to print. We actually looked at them when they first launched their company. They were called Cambrian Genomics. And he was the first laser printed DNA. That's what he was doing. He was laser printing DNA on demand. You had to order it. You could order it with your own sequencing. And it would mail order. Well, he's dead, by the way. I just saw a story the other day. His name was Austin Hines, founder of Cambrian Genomics, who custom printed DNA and had grand ideas about designing organisms. And I believe he was the guy that for $29.95, a few dollars here and there, I don't think he ever gave a price, you could create your own synthetic life and he would print it for you. He is now dead at age 31. Doesn't say how, but I thought it was a little, especially in how competitive this whole field is, I thought it was a little odd. Austin Hines, the founder of synthetic biology startup Cambrian Genomics, died last month. And this was last year, so we kind of missed it. It was in May of 2015. According to an obituary posted last week, Hines worked to change the world by democratizing access to synthetic DNA through cost-effective, accurate DNA laser printing. So, you know, we have these people democratizing DNA. We talk about Mad Science Gone Man all the time. He was the dude that made it within anybody's reach to be able to design a DNA segment, have it printed, and create their own life. So now we got this 3D printer that can synthesize molecules, molecules, guys, from scratch, and print them in a 3D printer to make our own chemicals. What kind of insanity is that? I mean, like, honestly, this has gone beyond just tinkering. Now we are able, with a 3D printer, to synthesize thousands of different molecules from a handful of starting chemicals. And didn't we talk about the, I don't remember what he called it. They were calling it like desktop manufacturing. That's one of the names that Eric Drexler, the father of nanotech, had talked about. Desktop manufacturing. I mean, that means you can synthesize chemicals, even ones that are super rare that you only find in a root of a flower in the Peruvian jungles, by just plugging in a few things and turning on a 3D printer. What kind of a world is this going to be? I saw probably one of the most disturbing things. We read about the CRISPR technology and the DIY kit the other day with the guy in Long Island creating new organisms in his parents' spare bedroom. Well, wait till you hear this one. MIT Technology Review, the scientific swap meet behind the gene editing boom. And oh, it sounds so nice. It's about how one nonprofit is making tinkering with genomes as easy as shopping at Amazon. It says the gene editing technology called CRISPR is probably the fastest spreading technology in the history of biology. And, you know, we've talked about CRISPR. I am actually working on getting through an hour-long interview with a professor at Harvard who was at the CRISPR beginnings, and his group has kind of been the group that created all of this. But he really talks about how CRISPR worked, and one of the things that got me, and I know I had questioned this when I first started learning about it, is that CRISPR, before it was a gene editing machine, it actually was a gene death machine. Because what CRISPR does is it unzips the DNA. You unzip DNA, you got a dead organism eventually. But, you know, thank God they figured out a way to have CRISPR unzip DNA and then put in a new sequence. Zip it back up again. Zoop, zoop. In that DIY story we read the other day, kid in Long Island, somebody had sent him the CRISPR technology taped, wrapped in wax paper or something, taped to a postcard, sent it to his house, and that's how he was going to start learning how to gene edit at home. Well, check this out. This not-for-profit called AdGene in Cambridge, Massachusetts, says this is why CRISPR is probably the fastest spreading technology in the history of all biology. Each weekday at 8 a.m. at the offices of AdGene in Cambridge, Massachusetts, interns start loading UPS packages containing the raw DNA material needed for gene editing and then sending it to people in places as far away as Zimbabwe and Croatia. AdGene is a nonprofit that exists to help scientists share their DNA inventions. Think of it as an Amazon.com for biological parts. Anyone can submit one or order someone else's parts for $65. Easy access to gene editing technology is what has allowed labs everywhere to get into the game. Last year, there were more than 1,300 scientific papers on CRISPR. And it's been used to do everything from curing muscular dystrophy in mice to making super muscle beagles. And yeah, that was in China. We read about that. And remember those Chinese scientists who set off an ethical firestorm by editing human embryos? We read about that one too. They did get their ingredients by mail order from where? Oh, from this same place, AdGene. So they're even sending it to the freaking Chinese. AdGene was started in 2004 by a graduate student, Melina Fan, who got tired of trying to beg and barter for key materials that she needed. Why not create a central repository which everyone can contribute? Sharing is something that people don't talk about enough. So this is like a seed bank for genomes? What? Sharing is something that people don't talk about enough, says Patrick Sue, a biologist at the Salk Institute. And it has dramatically sped up CRISPR adoption. In a way, AdGene shows why it is worth fighting over. It is in everyone's hands, and it is changing everything. You think? I mean, we now have the whole world handing out this gene editing technology to any Joe Schmo who wants it to go unzipping DNA of organisms of... and then mixing them, matching them, and making something new. How is this going to turn out in the end? If we have the whole world with this technology that, hey, they were saying how, like, absolutely catastrophic this could be to the entire planet just a few months ago, and now we find out they're just taping it to postcards and sending it to China. To Croatia, to wherever. I literally almost fell off my chair yesterday when I was reading this. So why aren't there brakes or controls on this technology? Let's just give it to everyone and hope we have an apocalypse very quickly. I mean, it's like they want this to happen. They're going to be able to come save us and we're going to need to be re-engineered. They're going to be our saviors by putting the nanobots in our blood that'll go repair all the damage. I mean, problem, reaction, solution. We can't be that idiotic that we just democratize this gene editing technology that's like changed the history, changed the future, changed everything. Mixing and matching genes from all these different creatures together. But we're just going to give it to everyone and let them all play with it and see what happens. Nothing bad will happen. We don't have biological experts in any of the militant groups over in the Middle East. No, not at all. All right, anyway, here's how it works. The language of DNA is a code, but it is physical. It's made up of a string of chemicals with labels of A, T, C, G. And to ship it, Adgene mails out a vial of E. coli bacteria with valuable bits of DNA spliced into the mini chromosomes known as plasmids. There are about 45,000 plasmids to choose from. Want to make a mouse brain cell react to lights? Well, then, that's plasmid number 20298, deposited by Carl Disroth, the famed co-inventor of optogenetics at Stanford. We read about that, too, right? Being able to insert and remove memories with flashes of light on brain cells? Yay! Thank you! Because that's now out there for the world to play with. Need to turn off every gene in a fruit fly but one? Oh, well, that's number 64750. Oh, my God. The most frequently ordered DNA of all of the code is to make Cas9, and that is the editing protein used in CRISPR. Since 2013, the ingredients for CRISPR have been sent out to more than 60,000 times, says Joanne Kamens, Adgene's executive director. And once a lab has bacteria harboring the gene, it can replicate it and make more because it is a renewable source. So they've sent it out to 60,000 labs, and those 60,000 labs could then reproduce the technology and send it out to 60,000 more each. It's the apocalypse. Who thought this was a good idea? Hugh, who is currently setting up his lab in California, has just ordered 10 plasmids the day I spoke to him. He typed in his name and telephone number and hit purchase. And Adgene made such exchanges easier by putting in place cookie cutter legal agreements. Yeah, like we're not responsible if you genetically engineer the apocalypse at all. It's all on you. For research centers like Salk that sign on, ordering genetic material from another university is a one-click affair rather than a trip to the legal department. This ingenious part was to get all of that paperwork out of the way, he says. I can't even believe that they're doing this. All right, guys. Well, you know what? I think here very shortly my bumper's going to be coming up anyway. I don't know. It says there's a problem with the internet connection and nothing's going anywhere. I get little yellow triangles, but I'm probably still recording because I am connected to the server here. Alright guys, well you know what, it's Friday, and don't worry about it because DARPA is creating a new antiviral that mutates within your own body to fight viruses real time, so. Hey, I hear my music! Alright, well I don't know if I have a connection. Alright guys, everyone have an awesome Friday, talk to you on Monday!
Now to this story, revolutionary technology that can edit genetic mistakes is getting attention and scrutiny this morning. CRISPR could help rid us of diseases like cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, and even HIV and cancer. Think about that. But many scientists, including CRISPR's developer, Jennifer Doudna, are calling for a moratorium on its use in humans. Tomorrow, she holds a global summit on the ethical issues. And only on CBS This Morning, Doudna shows us why, for all its promise, CRISPR is surrounded by controversy.
And what is CRISPR?
CRISPR, first of all, it's an acronym. It stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats, a huge mouthful. You can see why we use the acronym CRISPR.
Geneticist Jennifer Doudna gets asked that question a lot. A researcher and professor at UC Berkeley, Doudna has become a spokesperson for a gene editing technology she's credited with developing, that mouthful known as CRISPR.
I've heard it compared to essentially like a film editor, slicing a bit of film.
I would say that's a great analogy, yeah.
How does that work then?
Well, think about a film strip, you know, and you see a particular segment of the film that you want to replace. And if you had a film splicer, you would go in and literally cut it out and piece it back together, maybe with a new clip. Imagine being able to do that in the genetic code, the code of life. You could go in and snip out a piece and replace it with something that corrects a mutation that would cause disease.
That's incredible.
It's incredible.
CRISPR has generated immense excitement because it's fast, cheap, and can cut and paste genetic code with great precision. It used to take months or years to alter a single gene. Now, that can be done in a matter of days.
Could it end cancer?
What I'm excited about there is the potential to use the CRISPR technology to program a patient's immune system to recognize tumor cells in a precise way.
And imagine, Doudna says we could expect to see clinical applications of CRISPR within the next few years.
This is no longer science fiction.
But alongside CRISPR's promise come some fears of its perils.
What is the dark side of this technology?
One of them is, of course, making changes to human embryos, which become permanent. So we're talking about something that would affect human evolution.
You could have an instance where a lab is creating lots of human embryos just for the sake of experimenting on genome editing on them, right?
If you're asking me, could that be done technically? The answer is it could. Right? Could it be done, you know, with current regulations in place? Certainly not in the U.S.
No, or Europe.
Right? Or Europe, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's still a lot of other countries other than the U.S.
Well, this is the thing.
I mean,
right?
Yeah,
science is global, right?
Yeah.
Science is global. And, you know, and there are different cultural viewpoints on that kind of application.
In April, Chinese scientists reported using CRISPR to edit the disease genomes of human embryos for the first time.